Thanks for joining us here on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. And when the occasional lazy Saturday strikes, we have a tendency to get a little stir crazy at our place. So we've been known to pile into the minivan, take the back roads, and scope out the Main Street Cafe in whatever town we encounter. And let me tell you, Wisconsin's food options do not disappoint. There's a line for you in this discussion about Wisconsin's culinary scene. It's 800-642-1234. Are you a Wisconsin foodie? What do you love about food here in Wisconsin? What do you think people should know about your part of the state and the local treats that they should be trying? 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Talking about the latest food finds featured in PBS Wisconsin's Wisconsin Foodie, our guest is James Beard-nominated chef Luke Zahm. He owns the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, and he's host of Wisconsin Foodie. Luke, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
You know, you kick off this new season of Wisconsin Foodie by visiting a meat market in Sheboygan. What did you learn about, making brats and, of course, cooking them to perfection?
Sheboygan was an amazing experience. I think of like all the iconic pieces that, you know, people from outside the Midwest perceive of us as Wisconsinites. And Sheboygan, for a large part, like really embodied that experience. Being able to go into a Meatfeld and be with the third generation, you know, meat market owner and brat maker and kind of just see the behind the scenes. I think that there's an old adage, like you love the sausage, but you never want to see how it's made.
That's what I was thinking. Yep. Mm-hmm.
They really kind of proved that theory wrong. And I loved the fact that everyone in the place was so passionate about what they were doing and how they were doing it. There was so much tradition and pride in that episode and in those people in general, that it made it hard not to be absolutely crazy for it.
Do you have a quick tip about cooking them the right way?
Slow and low is literally the best advice I can give. So the thing that actually struck me when we were cooking the sausages outside of Meatfeld is they had almost let the fire go out on the grill. So they could, you know, usually I do the hand test where I can put my hand over the coals to kind of see how hot they are. And you could very comfortably have your hand over it. But that process really allowed all the juices and the fat to stay inside the sausage where it was intended, as opposed to those blowouts, which are kind of unsightly.
Yeah, and you lose a lot of the flavor, a lot of the goodness of the food when that happens to you. We know that this episode takes you to Sheboygan to learn about hard rolls, too. So what's tricky about making these rolls?
I think, to be honest with you, Keely, one of the things that was really, really tricky for me is I'm not as skilled in the pastry arts or the bakery arts as I am in the culinary side. So we visited a couple different bakeries in Sheboygan, and I'll tell you, the city bakery, Rick and his crew up there, they have a fine establishment, but I feel like that morning they got their money's worth out of me when we were shooting. I was there for about 6 hours, and I found myself like forming the dough. I found myself like actually loading the ovens, which is an incredible feat given that all these hard rolls are loaded onto like a 15-foot wood paddle.
Whoa.
That's very, very skinny. And so like it takes an artisan touch to get them off of the paddle and onto the stone deck oven and keep that process going. And everything in that bakery operation is efficient. So for me, it was really, really eye-opening to see, again, the amount of cultural pride that goes into, you know, something that can be taken for granted, like what you put that bratwurst on. In Sheboygan, that is definitely not the case. They take their brats and their patties and their buns very, very seriously.
Luke, did you drop any of those?
No, I didn't.
Wow. Well done. It sounded like it needed a lot of finesse, so I had to ask. The Sheboygan way is, I understand, eating a double brat on a hard roll. Is this now the best way to eat brats? Do you admit this?
So, yes, I will admit this. And I will say that Meatfeld's brat is totally fantastic. It is definitely the best bratwurst I've ever had. I have to say, though, the thing that really, really struck me, I've always grown up eating my brat with kraut and mustard and maybe a little bit of onion, but, you know, that was absolutely not the case in Sheboygan. They were really, really opinionated about what actually went on their brat. So I would say, when in Sheboygan, eat it as they do. Eat that double brat on a hard roll with a little bit of onion and mustard. But, you know, I think around the state, we all have our own way that we love the bratwurst.
Sure. Save face. Be careful with the condiments. I like that. You also have an upcoming episode about cheese making when we're staying in Sheboygan at Three Sheeps Brewing. Give us a preview of what we can expect from cheese making there.
So, you know, one of the things that actually struck me, we were in a cold storage facility outside of Plymouth, Wisconsin. And in that facility, there were 60 million pounds. And I don't say that lightly, 60 million pounds of cheese waiting to be shipped. The absolute enormity of, like, walking down a canyon of cheese was not a thing that we took lightly at all. It felt like there was a tremendous responsibility to tell the story of the dairy producers here in Wisconsin, but also to evangelize, like, about the cheese that's being produced in that area. More cheese crosses the center line of Plymouth, Wisconsin than any other place on the planet on a yearly basis. So, it is very, very important. But we got in tight with Deer Creek, and Chris and his crew have been making fantastic cheeses. And we go through the whole process of what we look for when we actually taste cheddar, which is something that I adore because, when I have young cooks that come into the restaurant or I hear people say, like, I hate mushrooms. I'm not actually really that interested in what you like and don't like. I want to know why. What is it you taste when you're tasting it? And I think that that's an amazing exercise with young cooks, but it also works really well with my kids. If they don't like something, ask them what they're tasting and why it is that they don't agree with it. And that whole episode is really an homage to that idea. What is it that we're tasting? What makes this some of the best cheese on the planet? And why is there this fanaticism about Wisconsin cheese, which is arguably, and in my mind, the best in the world?
We are catching up on the new season of Wisconsin Foodie, airing on PBS Wisconsin. Hoke Luke Zahm is talking about the season and also exploring Wisconsin's culinary scene with us. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. Which chefs are doing creative things with food in your community? Which restaurants keep you coming back, or your favorite locally owned ones? If somebody comes to your part of Wisconsin, what do they have to try before they leave town? 800-642-1234. You can also send us a tweet. We are at WPR Mornings. Luke, how does Wisconsin Foodie decide to highlight different aspects of one culinary scene? This time it's Sheboygan.
Sure. We're always looking for great stories. You know, we definitely pride ourselves as being storytellers, and we definitely think that that's a big part in shaping the Wisconsin identity, the food identity. And, you know, we have, like, this growing pain that I think the state we're going through right now, where we take our food very, very seriously here in Wisconsin and in the upper Midwest. But we also feel a little bit undervalued on the national scene. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that the Midwest is flyover country when it comes to food. So we want in the show to highlight these people who are literally cultural warriors, holding on to, you know, traditions that have been passed down to them over generations that give this place shape and meaning. And we're always trying to cultivate those stories because we think in the storytelling itself is where we find a renewed sense of identity and a bridge to push this place forward.
We've talked about your passion for telling stories from rural communities. Are chefs and cooks in these rural communities facing different challenges than their peers in more urban centers?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the struggle is real everywhere. The thing that's happening in rural communities in Wisconsin that we've seen, you know, a lot of times they get kind of, they get overlooked as far as being places that are very welcoming to new population sets. Viroqua, where our restaurant is and where we live, you know, it has a relatively diverse population. And as cooks in those places, you know, we have to be a little bit more traditional in the way that we recruit. So most of our cooks actually start as dishwashers. And we take the time to cultivate the experience of working in a business environment, of developing teamwork, of developing their palate to be able to execute amazing food on a daily basis. I think over the past, you know, 15, 20 years, there's been kind of a departure from that, where you see, you know, kids coming up and wanting to be executive chefs right out of the bat. And in rural communities, that's just not possible. So it takes a little bit of finesse to try and teach people that they have to cultivate this idea of being a chef and really finding their own food identity.
Is that inherently better or worse than going to school, getting a culinary education, and then becoming an executive chef right away?
You know, I don't think that it definitely is better or worse, to be fair. I think it's different. I think that there is sometimes humility in it. And one of the reasons, actually, that I love cooking is that it is actually, you know, it's tactile. I'm using my hands. I'm using my hands and all my senses, and I think that when you learn on the job, there's a humility that kind of comes with that. I really, really appreciate that, knowing that I can walk into just about any kitchen, and I may not be the best chef in the kitchen. As a matter of fact, I know most of the time I'm not. But because I've had to scrap for it and I worked my way up, I know that I can work with anybody. There's something really, really endearing in that.
Luke Zahm stays with us. He's a chef, a restaurant owner, and the host of Wisconsin Foodie. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the program? Or maybe you'd like to share what's special about food in your neck of the woods. 800-642-1234. The conversation continues here on The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Wisconsin Foodie introduces you to the people who grow and prepare food for a living. And host Luke Zahm is talking about the culinary excitement that the show is highlighting this season. And we want to hear from you. What is happening in your community that is creative when it comes to food? Or maybe there's a long-running restaurant, decades in the making, that keeps you coming back. Perhaps you are a chef or an amateur cook and you'd like some tips. You have something to share with us. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. And Luke, I'm wondering, what are you seeing when producing this season and traveling across the state that are new trends emerging in Wisconsin's culinary scene?
Sure. As far as new trends are concerned, I mean, I think some of the things that we're seeing are stronger affiliations with some of the cultural differences or different cultures that exist within the state. So being able to work with a Hmong farmer, Bao Xiong, and her dad and mom, Kia Lee, in the La Crosse Cameron Park Farmers Market, learning a lot about that food. But we're also getting a lot of feedback about, you know, trying to understand more about the Hmong community or the Laotian community. The other trends that we're seeing is not all of these food entrepreneurs have restaurants. So there's a lot more pop-ups happening. We're also seeing that, you know, kind of that idea of like one restaurant, one space, moving through to some of the food halls. I know like the Zocalo, the Food Trailer Park in Milwaukee is one of those, or the Crossroads Collective in Milwaukee. A lot of different entrepreneurs are in one space, so they offset costs. And it makes this, you know, dining experience where you can show up and you can get five different cultures worth of food in one location, which is awesome.
And sticking with that idea of different cultures and food here in Wisconsin, you mentioned speaking with a Hmong refugee whose family has been farming in the area for almost two decades. There's also Serbian Days Festival in Milwaukee that highlights more cultural inspiration that's here right in Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel absolutely blessed and honored. This last Thursday, when the episode went live on Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee PBS, I actually got to be in Three Brothers Restaurant in Bayview in Milwaukee, and I was dubbed an honorary Serbian, which was amazing.
Wow.
I think that's coming on my resume. But the love and like the warmth that they exude for their culture and the food that surrounds it, I mean, if food is a central piece to a lot of cultural gathering, and it's used as like the balm sometimes when there are differences. So I adore the fact that we've had the opportunity to showcase some of these people coming together and, you know, being able to highlight that for the rest of the state. Go eat this food.
Yeah. And when you're judging, though, you say that you can judge a restaurant by its burger. So are you still exploring new burgers, even though it seems like something maybe everybody kind of has one of?
Yeah, I'm always exploring new burgers.
Why not?
Exactly. If it's not broke, don't fix it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that kind of, for me, is like that hallmark of a standard. If you have a great burger, and most restaurants, you know, if you're going to feature a burger, you want that thing to be a showcase because everybody has one. What makes your burger different? What makes it exceptional? How do you determine what makes a burger exceptional? So, you know, as I travel around and I get the opportunity to eat and eat and eat, you know, I want to see what it is. We obviously want to find the best thing on your menu. And sometimes the burger just acts as that medium of seeing where you're at, taking the temperature, so to speak.
Okay, but let's pull back the curtain. What can you tell about a chef from their burger?
Oh, man. I almost don't want to give away the dirty secrets, but I can tell if, number one, how well you season your food. Number two, I can tell if you're overthinking your menu concepts. I think that there's kind of an axis sometimes between the ability to execute a menu and the creative inspiration behind it. And I think that, you know, sometimes younger cooks are really high on the creative aspect because, you know, why can't we make a buttermilk snow and a nasturtium salad and put that on a menu? Like, what does that even mean? To execute that and have it be tangible for, you know, the dining public to access and enjoy is a completely different story that takes time and technique and talent. So, you know, I can kind of see into a little bit of what's going on there. But you can also see a little bit, you know, the dedication to local sourcing if it's there. I'm always looking for, you know, that local beef because I think we have such an abundance of great product here in Wisconsin. And, you know, it just allows us to kind of just take a glimpse into what's going on behind the curtain.
All right. We're getting a few trade secrets from Luke Zahm, who's a chef and host of Wisconsin Foodie, airing on PBS Wisconsin. And we're talking about Wisconsin's culinary scene and the new season of the show. And Kelly from Cascade wants to join our conversation. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, my husband and I run a place that's just north of Beechwood. We're in Sheboygan County, and it's out of our home called The Nurturing Heart. It's rustic Italian cooking. We grow a lot of it on our farm, and we do a lot of experiential dining, cooking classes. We've cooked for couples, bread, pizza, you know, 4 or 5 course dinners. But we moved back from, we live in Colorado and then the Pacific Northwest, and came back to Wisconsin for this very reason, because we just felt like there's so much happening on the food scene and Wisconsin's got such a good cultural heritage here. My husband's roots are here, and so this just seemed like a great place to do it.
Kelly, thank you so much for sharing about your farm. And Luke, that's certainly an example of the fact that innovation in food is not necessarily happening just in restaurants.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that she kind of hit on a word there, experiential dining. I can say, honestly, that that's what a lot of diners are coming and looking for, specifically ones that are traveling from outside of, you know, our immediate locale. They want the experience of being immersed in the farming culture and all things Wisconsin when they're dining with us. So awesome.
Okay, so you are seeing a push sometimes, things like, you know, going to a farm. I know some places in the summertime do like pizza nights. So you go to the farm and you eat things, that pizza that's made with all ingredients there. People are interested in those. That isn't a niche thing right now?
No, I think that is actually kind of more and more, we see that in the summertime as being the pinnacle of people's, you know, dining experiences. And it really, you know, it changes the paradigm of the whole industry. to go to a farm where, you know, last year, for example, Wisconsin Foodie, we put on a dinner on Andy Hatch's farm in Dodgeville. And we had 100 tickets that sold. And it's this most idyllic setting you can imagine. It's on top of the ridge between Dodgeville and Spring Green. And diners came and we literally immersed them in all these products from the farm. It really helps that storytelling and that narrative of this is who we are and this is where we're from. And we can express that through food, which ends up being a very powerful medium.
Lynn from Racine called but couldn't stay with us, wanted to shout out Wells Brothers Restaurant, known for their pizza in Racine. Says they've been in business for 99 years and are on the fourth generation. So while we're talking about, you know, the newness that's happening in the culinary world, we also see places that have really created a legacy.
That old school. We were actually driving through Racine. We did a couple shoots there this last season. And that name kept popping up and up and up. So kudos to them. As a restaurateur for, you know, we've owned our restaurant for about 7 years now. 99 years is almost unthinkable. And given that most restaurants fail within the first 2 years, they definitely have it figured out. So props to them. I'll be back.
All right. Sounds great. Well, thank you so much, Luke, for taking us around the state, specifically spending a lot of time in Sheboygan and sharing a few secrets with us. We really appreciate it this morning.
Hey, I appreciate all of you. Keep watching, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, and we'll make sure that there's a link on our website so that you can see the latest on Wisconsin Foodie. Just go to WPR.org/mornings. Luke Zahm is a James Beard-nominated chef and owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, and he hosts Wisconsin Foodie. Just ahead, an hour-long conversation about the country's new trade deal with Mexico and Canada. We look at how the deal could affect jobs and businesses here in Wisconsin. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.